Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I begin in the name of the God whose mercy is profound, whose kindness is forever. In this series of lectures that we have arranged in Australia, we are trying to put across the understanding that the problem of radicalism in Islam that has resulted in many acts of terrorism is something that has emerged from a point of view which is not consistent with the true reading of the Quran, the correct understanding of Islam. However, the point of view that causes people to be aggressively, militarily inclined to spread across the word of Islam is immensely popular amongst a large number of Muslims. I would not like to say that they are in the majority, but most certainly it would be not acknowledging the reality if we say that they belong to a tiny minority. Most certainly, the people who are engaged in what they call jihad, and as a consequence of it, they are fighting against fellow humans, and they are doing jihad in the name of Islam, their number is not very large. They are substantial. However, they are not very large relative to the total Muslim population. But the fact of the matter is that the people who endorse their understanding, their narrative, are very large in number. So it is extremely important that we understand the narrative of the extremists, the people who are inclined towards radicalism and military expansion, and find out why they are wrong. But in order for us to understand their line of reasoning, it's important that we be objective in understanding what they are saying. Because if we talk about another point of view in a way that we are simply interested in criticizing and condemning it, in trying to prove it wrong, then we are not even listening to the other point of view. We want our point of view to be heard properly, and therefore we would like their point of view to be heard properly as well. It is through honest understanding of the different narratives and the underlying arguments behind them that we shall be able to find out, hopefully, sincerely, which point of view is correct. If I present the narrative of the militants, it would appear somewhat like this. A narrative, by the way, is the understanding that emerges from the reasoning of a group of people. The reasoning is based on some arguments from the original sources, arguments from the Quran, arguments from Hadith. The common man is not interested in what those arguments are, nor is he capable of analyzing them, critically examining them. What he is inspired by is the presentation of the conclusions of the end result. And that is to him what Islam is all about. That narrative is what needs to be understood. Before I describe the arguments of the narrative, let me mention by referring to a letter that was written some years ago by the Taliban to a number of scholars in Pakistan, urging them to support them, to support the cause of TTP, because that's the real, genuine Islamic cause. In his letter, he clarified that Pakistan was created with the purpose of establishing an Islamic state in the country. it was not carved out from the large country called India simply because Muslims wanted a new land to live in independently. It was not created to have masajid and madaris in Pakistan where Muslims could say their prayers and could study Islam. He says in his letter that there are a greater number of mosques and a greater number of madaris, seminaries in India. So quite clearly, that was not the purpose. He goes on to say that the purpose of creating Pakistan was to establish a proper, true, genuine Islamic state. Something which our elders did and our elders dreamt of. That is what we are striving for. And we are being challenged by Pakistan Army. We are being challenged by the Pakistani establishment. And they claim that what we are doing is against Islam. The fact of the matter is that what they are doing is against Islam. They are confronting us, the people who are genuinely striving to establish a proper, true Islamic state. Pakistan, it is claimed, is a democracy, says Ehsanullah Ehsan. This democracy is rejecting the possibility of implementing Islam. There have been 3 attempts in Pakistan to implement the Sharia through the initiatives of Sharia bills. Each time, those bills were rejected by the parliament, which claims to be the Muslim, the parliament belonging to the Muslims. So what he says is that if you are going to join us, we will be able to achieve the goal of making Pakistan a truly Islamic state. And this will be the starting point for us to expand this noble ideology to every part of the world. He says that when we are fighting against the enemy, the army, our role is not very different from the role of the Prophet, may God's mercy be on him, and his companions. When they migrated from Mecca to Medina and they fought against the enemy and they ensured that through their endeavors, their efforts, they shall be able to establish the rule of law of God's Sharia. Ehsanullah Ehsan says that we therefore are doing what is proper jihad. And all Muslims of the world have to decide as to whether they would want to side with us or with the Pakistani establishment. Those, by the way, who are supported by America, the Kuffar, Israel, the Kuffar. He says in his letter that the Quran is absolutely clear that those who are the friends of those Kuffar shall be counted as belonging to them. So, all in all, the idea is that we, Taliban Pakistan, are endeavoring to achieve a noble Islamic cause. What we are doing is absolutely in line with Islamic principles and teachings. This understanding of the Taliban, of ISIS, of Daesh, any and many other such initiatives, which all together claim that the aggressive, the military stance that they have adopted against non-Muslims and some of the fellow Muslims is exactly in accordance with the expectations of Islam. Their claim is based on a number of verses and ahadith which they understand in a manner that they feel that what they're doing is exactly what God wants them to do. I will present here before you some of the verses that these people present so as to be able to understand as to whether what they are saying is actually correct and in accordance with the Quranic expectations or not. There is a verse in Surah Shura, the 42nd Surah, chapter of the Quran, verse 13, which says, Shara lakum min ad-deeni ma wassa bihi Nuham wallazi awhayna ilayk wa ma wassayna bihi Ibrahim wa Musa wa Isa an aqimu ad-deen wa la tatafarraqu fi. The Almighty is saying that He gave you the law, the Sharia, the message, the same which He gave to Nuh alayhi salam, Noah. It's the same message that He gave to the Prophet, may God's mercy be on him, to Ibrahim, to Musa, to Isa alayhi salam. And the instructions were, an aqimud deen, that you establish deen, you implement it, and do not disagree, disintegrate, break into factions regarding it. What these people, and when I say these people, I mean not just the Taliban, the Daesh, the ISIS, Al-Qaeda, but the scholars who presented this point of view very forcefully, very confidently, that this is what is inviting us to establish an Islamic state and to make sure that if people are not convinced, then it is established by force. What they're saying is that the verse is urging the believer and clarifying to him that this religion, this message of truth, was delivered to all messengers with this clear mandate, expectation from the Almighty, spelt out, an aqimud deen, that you establish this deen, religion, its law. It has not been given to you to just read, to understand, and to practice at a personal level. It was given to make sure that its dictates prevail over the system that you are running. There is another verse in chapter 5, Surah Al-Ma'idah, verse 44, which says, and it's a part of a series of verses which are similarly making statements, strong statements about some people. The Almighty says in verse 44 of Surah Al-Ma'idah, وَمَنْ لَمْ يَحْكُمْ بِمَا أَنْزَلَ اللَّهِ فَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْكَافِرُونَ. The one who does not decide in accordance with what God has revealed, such are the people who are kafir. They are the ones who are rejecting and denying the truth, and therefore they are criminals in the eyes of God. So, on the one hand, God has required believers to establish His deen. On the other hand, He has declared that those who are erecting barriers in the way of establishing deen are the ones who are kafir, who are rejected in the eyes of the Almighty, and they do not deserve any sympathy from believers. Then there is another verse which is presented by these promoters of militant Islam, which is verse 85 of Surah Al-Baqarah, the second chapter of the Quran, which says, أَفَتُؤْمِنُونَ بِبَعْضِ الْكِتَابِ وَتَكْفُرُونَ بِبَعْضِ. So that, do you deny, do you believe in some part of the book and you reject and deny the other part? That is, if you are picking and choosing from God's Sharia, instructions, expectations that are to your liking, and you are ignoring and rejecting others, that is exactly what this particular verse is talking about. And it goes on to say, فَمَا جَزَاءُ مَنْ يَفْعَلُ ذَلِكَ مِنْكُمْ. And what else should be the punishment of those amongst you who do such acts, who behave in such a manner? إِلَّا خِزْيٌ فِي الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا. Except for insult, ignominy in this worldly life. وَيَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ يُرَدُّونَ إِلَىٰ أَشَدِّ الْعَذَابِ. And on the day of judgment, they are going to be taken to an even more severe punishment. That is, they are clarifying that the insult and ignominy that Muslims are facing in the present world is because of the fact that Muslims are ignoring some part of the book and accepting and following only another part of the book. That is easier for them. That is to their liking. And God has declared that if this policy, hypocritic policy, is going to be followed by Muslims, they'll be insulted. And that insult is what we are witnessing right now. Despite being something like 57 countries, we are weak. We are vulnerable. We are at the mercy of the power of the kuffar. So what they're saying is that Muslims, by refusing to implement God's Sharia at the level of the society, are actually picking and choosing which the Almighty has severely condemned. And we are promoting the cause of the Sharia to be implemented in totality, completely. And therefore, we are inviting all well-meaning Muslims to join us and to do what we are doing. The next verse that they present is a verse which has been mentioned in the Quran thrice. So, imagine that God asks believers or makes a statement of principle in the Quran once, and it's enough for it to be the ultimate message for the Muslims to follow. But imagine if it's done thrice, then the significance, the importance of it is enhanced still further. So, they quite often quote this verse to people to convince them that what they're doing is in actual fact what God wants them to do, wants all Muslims to ensure. The verse is ninth verse of Surah As-Saff, 61st chapter. It's the very same verse which is expressed in verse 33 of chapter 9, Tawbah. And almost the same words are repeated in the 28th verse of Surah Al-Fatah, 48th chapter. The verse says in Surah As-Saff, verse 9, هُوَ الَّذِي أَرْسَلَ رَسُولَهُ بِالْهُدَى وَدِينِ الْحَقِّ. It is He who sent His messenger with the true religion, with guidance and true religion. يُزْهِرَهُ عَلَى الدِّينِ كُلِّ. So that this religion dominates over, prevails over all other religions. وَلَوْ كَرِهَ الْمُشْرِكُونَ. Even though the polytheists may dislike it. So, what these people are saying is that it is God's mandate, it's His expectation that He has given to His messenger and through Him to His followers, that they should make sure that the message of God prevails over all other messages. That, in other words, predominant system, the predominant ideology. Every other system is removed, and it is Islam's rule that should dominate over the entire globe. If this is possible through preaching, we don't mind it, they would say. But if people don't allow us to convert and to enable, therefore, to let the system be dominated by, guided by God's word, then we most certainly are going to use force. And this is what God has required us to do. The Prophet, may God's mercy be on him, demonstrated how it should be done. And he used force. He and his companions did jihad. And when they did jihad, they made sure that the Almighty's law dominating the Arabian Peninsula. After the demise the Prophet, his companions continued with the mission. They spread this mission across to all four corners of the world that they were able to invade. And this has to continue. This mission would remain incomplete until such time that the entire globe comes under the administration of Muslims who would ensure that the Islamic Sharia gets implemented. So what they're saying is that our stance is very simple. We stand for the supremacy of Islamic Sharia over the entire globe. And the Quran is requiring us, asking us to do it. When we read the Quran, we find God urging us to make sure that His law, which was meant for the entire humanity, is ensured to be implemented over the entire humanity. It is a similar statement as has been mentioned in the Bible as well, that, O God, the way your law prevails over the entire universe ought to also prevail in the world that humans live in. So we are doing the job of the Almighty. We are supporting Him. And He will support us, as indeed He has promised us in the book that He has revealed to His Prophet. The other verse that they also quite often quote is the verse which informs that the people who are going to make non-Muslims, kuffar, their friends, are going to be counted in the eyes of God to be belonging to them. The verse 51 of chapter 5, Surah Al-Ma'idah says, وَمَنْ يَتَوَلَّهُمْ مِنْكُمْ فَإِنَّهُ مِنْكُمْ. The one who makes them their friends is indeed amongst them. He is no different. He is going to be counted in the eyes of God as belonging to them. So what they're saying is, the Pakistan army, the Pakistani establishment, and all other Muslims around the world who have become allies with the United States of America, who are siding with America against those sincere Muslims who want to implement the Sharia in their lands and then later across the world, those who are fighting them by siding with the American forces are actually kuffar, because they are counted, according to the Quran, to belong to the people that they are making friends, to the people that they are allies of. So what they're saying is that, why are you surprised that we are fighting Pakistan army, even though they are Muslims? What we say is that they are not Muslims. They are hypocrites. They have had military agreements with the Americans, and therefore they belong to them. And we are doing nothing wrong when we are fighting them. So this is another line of argument that is coming from the Taliban and people who likewise are making efforts to implement the Sharia through use of force. Then there is this hadith that is quite often quoted by these people who say, which says, "Umirtu an uqatil an-nas hatta yaqula la ilaha illallah." The Prophet, may God's mercy be on him, is reported to have said that I have been asked to fight against other humans until such time that they say la ilaha illallah. Or in other words, they convert to Islam. They become Muslims. So what they're saying is that the Quran and Hadith are consistent in urging the believer to fight, to endeavor, to do jihad, to make sure that God's message, God's law, is given the opportunity to dominate and prevail over the entire humankind. And we are doing exactly that. We are following the Quran, we are following the Sunnah, and we are being blamed for it. We are being killed for it, bombed for that cause, for that aim an objective that we have set forth for ourselves. Then they also present another hadith, which they quote to support their stance when they use force for the purpose of implementing the law of God, the Sharia. They say that God Almighty Himself has asked us through His Messenger in one of the hadiths in which the Prophet, may God's mercy be on him, said, Man ra minkum munkaran, whoever amongst you sees an evil, falyughayyirhu biyadihi, then he should change it, improve it, correct it with his hands. Failam yastati, then if he doesn't have the strength, it is not good for him to do, fabilisani, then he should use his tongue. Failam yastati, and if that too is not possible for him, fabiqalbi, then he should condemn it in his heart. Wazalika azzaful iman, and the Prophet, may God's mercy be on him, said, and that is the weakest part of faith. So what they're saying is that why are you surprised when we use force in Swat, in northern areas, in Afghanistan, elsewhere, to implement the Sharia? We have been given this authority, we have been given this responsibility by the Prophet God, who has urged us to use force, to use our hands, if that is possible for us, that is within our means and capacity, to correct what is evil. So all in all, ladies and gentlemen, the stance of the militants is expressed in the form of the narrative that they mention quite often. They've come to make sure that they use force and then ensure that God's law dominates over the land that they are a part of. And then this change is promoted and exported to the rest of the world. This understanding that this is what is jihad. The effort, the military expeditions undertaken for the purpose of ensuring that this goal, ideal, is achieved, is what God is requiring us to do. And therefore, no one has a right to stop us from doing it. If non-Muslims would stop us, we will fight against them. And if fellow Muslims are going to prevent us from proceeding with our ideals, we shall fight against them. Because this is what our God has clearly required us to do. And He is urging us to make sure that we continue our efforts until such time that this ideal is fully and completely achieved. I will just briefly mention at the end of the presentation of the narrative of the militants answers to some of the claims they have made through the Quranic verses and through Ahadith. The first verse that they present about ensuring that religion gets implemented, which is commonly called Iqamat-e-Deen, is in actual fact mentioning the fact, is urging the believer that he follows God's religion. An-Aqimud-Deen means that God has given this message to you so that you practice it, so that you are sincere with it. Quite obviously, if I am following my religion at my individual capacity, then I will follow as best as I can the Almighty's expectations at an individual capacity. And if I am given an authority, I will make use of the authority that the Almighty has given me as best as I can to make sure that God's expectations are introduced at the level of collectivity where I am responsible. But this has nothing to do with using force to ensure that God's law, Sharia, dominates over the entire world. This particular verse is very similar to another verse which is there in Surah Ali Imran, the third chapter of the Quran. It's verse 102 or 103, wherein the Almighty requires Muslims to wa'tasimu bihablillahi jamia wa la tafarraqu. and hold fast to the rope of God, all of you together, and do not disintegrate into factions. So it's not asking believers to use force to implement the Sharia. It is asking all believers to be sincere in following God's law at the level that they are responsible to follow it in the different capacities that they find themselves in. The verse that says those who refuse to implement the Almighty's verdict, such are the people who are kafir, is actually stating that a Muslim would never oppose the message of the Almighty, the expectations of the Almighty, the Sharia of the Almighty. Whether the Almighty's Sharia should be implemented immediately, what exactly constitutes God's Sharia is something which Muslims would decide through this discussion, through mutual consultation, as indeed we shall talk about it later. So, one thing is the expectation, for instance, that riba should be prohibited. But there is another matter that needs to be seen as to what exactly is riba. And if there is a difference of opinion, then obviously there has to be a mechanism decided, and God has himself mentioned that mechanism, which I will take up for presenting in a later session. That needs to be followed. In no way this verse can be presented to show that if people are not following the Sharia as understood by some other people, they should use their military might to implement that Sharia. In fact, God Almighty himself implemented his Sharia gradually, even at the time when the messenger of God, may God's mercy be on him, was himself present. The third verse, which says, do you believe in some part of the book and disbelieve and reject the other part, is again requiring the believer to make sure that he or she accepts the Almighty's Sharia in totality, accepting it from heart and not rejecting any part of it is indeed a requirement of faith. But in no way is requiring Muslims to become militants to make sure that they implement Sharia the way they understand it and they do it in its entirety. Likewise, the three verses which have the same wordings mentioning the fact that God's messenger was given guidance and the religion of truth, so that it dominates over the entire, all other religions. This was a requirement which the messenger of God implemented during his lifetime. As we have seen earlier, and we shall see later as well, it was a requirement of the Almighty's expectation. In case of all messengers of God, all Rasul, that when they come, their message dominates. And those who oppose, they are defeated, annihilated. This is a law that is specific with the era of messengers. They are the ones about whom the Almighty decides that they are going to dominate. Katab Allah, God has written it down. La ghalibanna, I am going to prevail. Ana wa rusuli, I and my messengers. So it's the mention of the implementation of that law relevant to the messengers of God that has been mentioned in verses 9 of Surah 61, verse 33 of Surah 9, and verse 28 of Surah 48. As far as the verse that is saying that whoever makes non-Muslim their friends is going to be counted as belonging to them. That is, if you make a non-Muslim, which these people call kuffar, as your friends, then they are going to be considered in the eyes of God as kuffar. But the fact of the matter is that this verse, as it appears in Surah 5, chapter Surah Al-Ma'idah, verse 51, it is using the words Al-Yahud and An-Nasara. Both nouns are preceded by Alif Lam, which in Arabic is the equivalent of the in English. When Alif Lam is used before a noun, it would either mean all of them, all those who belong to the category of the noun that has been used, or Alif Lam would mean some of them. In other words, these people about whom this particular presentation discussion is taking place. If the verse says that you cannot make the Jews and the Christian your friends, if it is read to mean that Muslims cannot make any Christian, any Jew his friend, then it would mean that the Quran is contradicting itself. Because the Quran itself has allowed Muslim men to get married to chaste women from amongst the people of the book, the Jews and the Christians. How can somebody make a lady his wife on the one hand and yet not be friends with her? How can God allow the possibility of getting married to people with whom there is no friendship possible? Why would God praise some of the people of the book so lavishly that it would cause some weak Muslims like us to envy them? God has praised the people of the book, the Jews and the Christians, in verses 113 to 115 of Surah Ali Imran. So there again, these people have made a presentation which does not make sense. The hadith that they have quoted, أُمِرْتُ أَنْ أُقَاتِلَ النَّاسِ حَتَّى يَقُولَ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهِ, is the hadith which again is referring to the same mandate, principle that is relevant to the messengers of God. The Prophet, may God mercy be on him, came to this world with a mandate that the people who are his immediate addressees are going to be the ones who will convert to Islam. Otherwise, they'll be annihilated. That is exactly what the Quran says. That is exactly how it happened. It has got nothing to do with the rest of the mankind. It is era specific, and it did what it is saying. And more significantly, the hadith is mentioning that I have been asked to an uqatil an-nas, to fight against the people. Here the people means the polytheists. It doesn't even mean the people of the book, because we know from the Quran that the people of the book were not forced to convert to Islam. They were asked to pay jizya and remain as second-rate citizens. This particular hadith is referring only to the polytheists of the Arabian Peninsula, about whom the Almighty said, the Almighty asked his messenger to make sure that he continues to fight them until such time that they say La ilaha illallah and they convert to Islam, or else they're going to be killed. Finally, the hadith that says, Man ra minkum munkaran falyughayyirhu biyadihi, whoever sees an evil, then he should change it, correct it with his hands. Fa illam yastati, then if he cannot do it, if it's not within his means, fa bilisanihi, then he should do it with his tongue. Fa illam yastati, and if that too is not possible, fa biqalbihi, then he should do it in his heart. And this is the closest, this is the weakest part of faith. This hadith is mentioning the fact that we have to do what is right, follow what the Almighty has expected us to follow, in accordance with our authority, in accordance with the jurisdiction of where we can be effective. A person who is the administrator of an institution, principal, headmaster of a school, his authority is over the jurisdiction of the school. But there again, if there is anything wrong happening, he should change it with his hands, if changing with hands is the right approach given the circumstances. Because the Almighty also asks us to use wisdom when we are trying to invite others towards faith. So, it is not giving every human the right to force what he thinks is correct upon others. The Prophet, may God's mercy be on him, lived in Mecca after declaring that he has started receiving God's messages, and he has declared himself as the messenger of God. He lived in Mecca for 13 years. He prayed in the Kaaba, where there were 360 idols, statues that were being worshipped, something which we know is an evil. And yet, the Prophet, may God's mercy be on him, did not touch even a single statue ever in those 13 years. However, when he came back later, 8 years after migrating to Medina as a conqueror, call it ruler, he cleansed the Kaaba from all those idols. In one case, he didn't have the authority. In the other, he had the authority. So what this hadith means is that if you see an evil happening before your eyes, you have the authority, and it is the requirement of the wisdom of implementing God's Sharia that you should use your authority to change it. It's only then that you can change it. I cannot use my authority. I cannot tell others belonging to the families of others to do what I think is correct, and I can't use force for that purpose. If that is going to be the case, wherein people would start using force to ensure that God's Sharia gets implemented in the lives of others, it would create chaos. It would mean that we will start using force against each other. This most certainly is an incorrect, flawed, and a very misleading understanding of hadith. So, brothers and sisters, in our effort to understand why the militants are doing what they are doing, and in our endeavor to know whether what they are doing is correct or not, we have undertaken a series of presentations, and in this particular session, I have attempted to give the line of reasoning of the militant Muslim, the radicals, and I have briefly responded to their claims. May the Almighty enable us to understand the truth the way it is, and may He enable us to know what is untruth and enable us to stay away from it.